you are invited to witness a shattering adventure in total fright.
Watch me when I kill!
Prepare yourself for shock after shock, for horror beyond belief, and spine-tingling suspense that never lets go.
Watch me when I kill!
You have never experienced the sheer terror, the menacing suspense that awaits you when you see...
Watch me when I kill!
You will watch it happen. You will be there when the unseen killer stalks his unsuspecting victims. Scream if you wish, but nothing will stop him. Are you ready to accept this invitation?
Watch me when I kill!
Rated R.
I think I might have liked it if I'd been able to fucking see anything. Radio Drone. Thursday nights are where the true horror of Radio Drone is unleashed. I am Josh Hadley. With me, as always, is Cecil T. Robot.
Interesting joke that I got nothing.
Okay, Cecil just totally fucking gimped that. Peter? Peter, do you have something?
You're all doomed.
I was thinking of something, you know, you're like the horror. I was thinking, you know, you getting out of the shower or something like that.
If people did want to get turned on, they could go to adamandeve.com. I'm really good at picking up on subtle, not so subtle cues.
You really are the master of the segue.
I've never been on one of them untip-overable things in my life. You shut up. But if you go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code DROME, you will get 10 free gifts on top of whatever you order. You will get 6 free DVDs, a free mystery gift, a gift for him, a gift for her, and free U.S. shipping, all for using the promo code DROME at adamandeve.com. Now that we got that horror out of the way, I want to talk about horror movies and how they have progressed, evolved, degressed, or devolved over time. Because especially in the horror field, not only do you notice certain trends, you know, you'll notice this was the slasher movie era, this was the vampire movie era, etc. But you'll notice that what constitutes horror has changed. What is the thing you've noticed the most about how just in your lifetime you have noticed the horror movies that you grew up on versus the movies that are coming out, say, just within the last decade?
The big thing was that the earlier horror films, they actually spent time building, you know, having some character development, building tension, and getting you set up for when, you know, the kills started happening. And now we have a lot of movies where they do the whole start off with like some big crazy action sequence where somebody dies, and oh my god, that's supposed to get everybody really scared, and then they kind of bleed a little bit into character development, and then death, 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 the end. It's a bunch of people that you don't care about. They're all cannon fodder. And a lot of the older slasher films especially, there were characters that, sure, some of them were dicks and some of them were the, you know, the heroes. But like each one of them had a distinct personality and you liked or disliked them. And you were rooting for the characters, as opposed to now you hate everybody and you're rooting for the killer.
I've noticed from when I was younger to now, there was a lot of, I mean, because I'm a little bit younger than you guys, so my, like, earliest sort of memories of just finding out about horror was, movies like, you know, the Friday the 13th series and Nightmare on Elm Street and Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer, and I saw kind of the evolution of the slasher film where it would kind of mimic each era it was in. But what I noticed was subtlety began to drop off. And this is going to what Cecil was saying, where you used to spend a lot more time with characters, with their traits. You used to have a lot more character development, even in like a slasher film where people would die, you would still like the characters. I have noticed that now it's just you cram in as much gore and death in a span of an hour and a half as you possibly can. And they're really overdoing the whole found footage thing I find lately as well. Like, you know, say what you will about Blair Witch Project. That movie was marketed brilliantly because there was almost nothing like it before that, except for maybe Cannibal Holocaust. And now, like, every other month, there's some new found footage ghost movie or found footage whatever movie.
And to be fair, Peter, found footage is almost exclusively a horror subgenre.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see found footage movies in other genres very often. You do see them, like there's that Vegas one with the comedy, like Bride's Night Out or something like that, and you see sci-fi ones every now and then. But overall, found footage is a horror subgenre.
Yeah, so it's really oversaturating the genre because you're seeing so much of it within one genre, and yeah, there seems to be such a lack of suspense, a lack of character development. It's just, if we can cram in as much gore as possible, that'll scare people. And there are some recent horror films that I really love, that I really enjoy. Some of the supernatural based ones, a couple of the more indie based slasher films, but really my passion for the genre still kind of lies in the 80s, I would say.
Well, because what I'm kind of looking at here is, especially in the case of remakes or years later sequels, the tone or the style is so radically different. Now, obviously, movies are going to be of the time that they're made. You know, you can't watch a movie from the 70s and not go, that was made in the 70s, just by the style of how it was made. That said, I'm looking at the new Poltergeist trailer for the Poltergeist remake. And the original Poltergeist, it did have a few jump scares, but it was really more about mood and tone. And just the trailer alone is jump scare, jump scare, boo scare, jump scare, jump scare, boo scare, jump scare. There are more jumps and quick edits in the trailer than there was in the entire original franchise of Poltergeist, which says something has changed in what constitutes horror. Do you think something like the original Poltergeist, which still to this day scares the hell out of me, do you think that tone, that style, that atmosphere would work on a modern audience, or do you have to go the jump scare route?
I think it would work on audiences nowadays. I think filmmakers and producers and just the general companies that are releasing these movies need to take their audiences a little more seriously and not treat them with such kid gloves and, you know, force in as many jump scares as possible. Because I do think that there are definitely audiences out there that still appreciate mood, that still appreciate atmosphere. Like, I mean, there are filmmakers nowadays like Ty West, who made that great babysitter cult movie. I think it was House of the Devil. Yeah, that's a total slow burn, old school style horror film. And it was awesome. And I know a lot of people that really dug that movie, and I know it did well on home video sales. But instead, you know, we're treated to as many jump scares as possible. The Paranormal Activity movies, the new Poltergeist movie just looks like crap. I think they're an audience would appreciate a slower burn, more of a mood. I just think the actual people, the companies and the filmmakers that are putting the movies out, they don't take their audiences seriously. Like it's like they're treating them like children. Like they think we need to give you cues. It's like a laugh track. You know, we need to have a jump scare so you know when to be scared. And I think that's really insulting your audience.
Boo scares. I understand the necessity for them in certain situations. Sometimes they do work, but they're so abused. I think that the biggest problem is right now, let's just say Hollywood in general, they're catering way too much to the ADD crowd. They're thinking that if they don't have jump scares and boo scares, if they don't have all this stuff constantly being thrown at the audience, that the audience is going to lose interest and they're going to fade out and they're going to think it's boring. And unfortunately, they're kind of right, because I work with a guy who if he's watching a movie and it doesn't like captivate him within the first like 5 minutes, he'll start fast forwarding it. And then he'll complain that the movie was stupid or boring when he didn't really even watch the movie. He'll watch like a little bit of the beginning, fast forward, look for something to happen, and then watch the ending, and then complain about it. And I think that that's an unfortunate problem right now, where you have a lot of people that they just don't have the patience. There are occasional times where you'll get something that is kind of embraced, like The House of the Devil, like The Innkeepers. I mean, Ty West is really good at that 70s slow burn style. I mean, both those movies are freaking awesome. But there are people who watch those movies that I know, they're like, oh my God, it's so boring. Nothing happens. And I'm like, what do you mean? I'm sitting there like digging my nails into the chair because it's atmosphere. That to me is scary. Not opening a closet and having a loud noise jump out at you. Drag me to hell. Ugh.
Well, you brought up something interesting there, Cecil. The eras, like you said, Ty West is good at that 70s style. Let's go back to, now obviously horror films were around before this. You had Nosferatu, Hunchback of Notre Dame, Midnight, London After Midnight, etc. Really, we would say the first modern horror cycle started with Universal, with Dracula. You look at the original Todd Browning Dracula, it's all mood. It's all tone. Now some of that is due to the fact that they couldn't get away with what even in the, like what the 70s Frank Langella Dracula could in terms of nudity and whatnot. Dracula biting women on the neck thing was very much a sexual substitution. That said, that's an incredibly moody film, isn't it? None of the remakes have quite matched that mood, have they?
I think that the Bram Stoker's Dracula did a very good job at capturing that foreboding, like just oppressive atmosphere of it. I mean, it was a very just moody film. I wouldn't necessarily call it a horror film, but because it wasn't particularly scary, but it did have this just thick, heavy weight to it. And, you know, it was just the way that it was shot and the camera angles made everything just feel like, I don't know, I keep saying, you know, but dense, like it. So, I mean, I think that that's a case of that feeling close to it. But the majority of them are not that. The majority of them are a little bit more bang for your buck kind of movies where it's, you know, vampire, you know, with the exception of like the Hammer films, like you got vampires kind of bouncing around and, you know, going after high school girls.
Well, yeah, I mean, Dracula used to be definitely this very moody, dark a character that is so much more captivating, not by what he says or his like violent bounce off the wall. What is it? What's that one that where they're in the Antarctic or whatever? 20
days
a night. Yeah, I mean,
I
like that movie, but that's definitely how the vampire genre has evolved. Where you've nowadays, you got these, if it's not Twilight, it's a movie like that, like 20 Days a Night, where you got vampires with blood.
30 Days of Night. It's a whole month, damn it.
30? I thought you said 20. Yeah, I haven't seen it in a while. But yeah, that's kind of how the genre has evolved. Like, and I dig the darker, moodier Dracula. I think that really made the character stand out. And then the genre definitely evolved into a few things that are kind of cool. I mean, I have to tip my hat to movies like Near Dark and the first Blade, but we also got just terrible movies like Twilight as well. So I think it'd be cool if the genre were just much like how Ty West is doing, like the 70s supernatural style. It would be cool to sort of bring Dracula back into that for the modern audiences as well.
Well, do you think that the modern audiences, that their styles changed and the movies were forced to change with them, or the movies' styles changed and then therefore the audience's styles changed with them? For instance, my friend Hank Carlson did the special effects on a slasher movie a couple of years ago called Psycho Holocaust. In that, a man gets raped to death with a saw blade, all on camera. And one of the reviews, Hank was so proud of this review, said that this is not what a horror film is. You would, and I'm quoting here, you would never see Vincent Price raping a guy with a saw. And he's right about that. What do you think changed between Vincent Price being the killer in all of these other films to a man being raped in the ass with a saw. I mean, was it the audience that changed the films or the films that changed the audience?
That's a good question. Well, it's new genres being added, new subgenres being added to horror. Like the whole raping somebody with a saw blade that's a very exploitation kind of thing. It's not a Vincent Price. It's not a Vincent Price movie. It's not one of those, like what's the one where the wax, God, I'm really drawing a blank tonight. The Wax Museum one, House of Wax.
House of Wax. In 3D.
And that's a cool movie. Like that's a very Vincent Price type horror film. Whereas someone getting raped to death with a saw blade, that came more into play into the genre as a subgenre in the 70s and 80s. And that grew an audience, and there are people that like to watch that kind of stuff, and there are people that like to watch the Vincent Price kind of horror, and neither is really a defining horror thing. Like, if you're like, oh, this isn't horror, Vincent Price wouldn't do this, that's just your opinion. You know, if you like Vincent Price, that's fine.
It's just like your opinion, man.
Exactly. It's if you're gonna be an elitist like that and just say, oh, well, Vincent Price wouldn't do that, that isn't horror. Well, you know, you're missing out on a huge chunk of the genre. And, you know, be a fan of whatever movies you want to be a fan of. Like Vincent Price all you want. But he's not the pinnacle of horror. There's plenty more to the genre than Vincent Price.
It's tough because there are people out there that audiences kind of demanded something different. It's also possible that, you know, one movie came along and it did really well and it kind of, oh, well, that changed the dynamic of it. Well, that's what people want. You know, I mean, we were going along with horror films, and then all of a sudden, you know, Peeping Tom and Halloween come along and they're really big hits, and then they're like, oh, well, that kind of invented the slasher genre. So then it's like, okay, well, we need a killer and he's killing people. And then Friday the 13th more or less kind of set the template for it, where it's like, okay, well, here we have a killer, we're going to go with mask, and he is constantly killing teenagers or college students. And that kind of became the template that so many movies went for until it got to a point where it switched to another thing. Okay, well, now the thing that everybody's scared of is viruses, or the thing is zombies, or the next thing. So it's constantly kind of evolving and going with trends. So I think it's more along the lines of they both kind of change each other. The audience is always looking for something a little bit different. And there's always going to be somebody who, you have a director or a writer who kind of looks, hey, you know, we haven't had a ghost movie in a while, so let's make this movie and it's ghosts. And then Paranormal Activity comes out and scares the shit out of everybody. And then next thing you know, there's a bajillion ghost movies that come out after that.
Well, do you think, though, that it becomes almost a degradation of horror? When you get something like the slasher movie boom, Harlan Ellison wrote an article in like 1982 about all the knife kill movies out there. That's just what he called them, because that's all they are, knife kill movies. But in that, as much as he hated them, he pointed out that they didn't start out like this. He pointed out Halloween, that weren't all about what sharp implement can we stab through a co-ed. But he has a point. By about 82 or 83, it became that. It became, well, that movie only had 4 kills in it. We're going to have 9 kills. Oh, yeah, you're going to have 9? Well, we're going to have 13. Oh, yeah, you're going to have 13? We're going to have 24. That it, especially in the slasher genre, it almost became a game of one-upsmanship, which I think forced the genre down.
I don't know, because I kind of enjoyed the creativity of it, where it was like, okay, well, you know, we're going to kill. There were certain movies where they didn't up the kill count, they upped the creativity. They're like, okay, well, we're going to saw this person in half, or we're going to, like Friday, Nightmare on Elm Street comes along and it's Freddy with the glove with the knives on it, you know? And so it's they're coming up with creative ways to kill people, not just upping the body count. So, yes, there were movies that each one, they kept trying to up the body count. And I know you don't like the series, but Scream 2 kind of goofed on the sequelitis, where it's like, upping the body count, doing this and following those trends. It wasn't always that. I think it was more of a lot of the C-lister horror films that were just when they didn't have a particularly good idea, they would just up the body count to try to compensate for the fact that there wasn't anything particularly special about the movie.
While there are definitely some stinkers in the knife kill slasher genre, just like with anything, it has its place. Body count movies have their place. The Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, these are classics. And yeah, it's kind of just the creativity of how they're doing it. It's a one-upsmanship, but it's fun when it's done well, and it's really entertaining to watch. It can kill an hour and a half really easily because the characters are usually goofy and the kills are creative, and they're fun. They're not exactly movies that you need to use your brain for too much. Like, you can easily turn your brain off and watch most of them. I wouldn't say they hurt the genre, because like every generation has its trend. Like I was saying earlier, you know, you have nowadays, there's just a whole stream of the found footage movies and the ghost movies, like, you know, Insidious did well. So there's a whole bunch more movies like that. The 80s had the big knife kill movies, and some were great and some were crappy. And that's pretty much just the way that it goes.
A shift happened in the audience, and then, of course, the films followed, especially with the slasher movie boom, but this is horror in general. You used to, in the early days of the slasher movie boom, as Cecil pointed out earlier, you cared about these characters, and you didn't want to see them die. By about 1984, 1985, you went to these movies rooting for the killer. The killer became the hero, and you wanted these characters to get killed. And I think that said more about where society was at that point than it did about anything else. Because you should go into a slasher movie going, I hope they don't kill this guy because I really like this character, not get him, get him, get him. When Freddy Krueger and Leatherface and Jason Voorhees became the hero of the film, you started to see that shift of them almost talking down to you. Oh yeah, you wanted more Jason? Well, fine, there's more Jason. We tore a whole bunch of pages out of the script. You don't need characters, you need caricatures. And I think that hurt the genre overall.
I don't know. I think that, like I said earlier when I started off, it's that the movies, when you're getting the seventh, eighth, ninth iteration of a series, it's revolving around the killer, and people aren't going to see the kids be able to outsmart Jason or Freddy or whatnot. They're going to see Jason eviscerate some people. And so consequently, the killer becomes the star. It's a very odd conundrum. And I think it's unusual, too, because a lot of times when you're watching a film like that, you're supposed to identify with one of the characters, the final girl or whatnot.
And I think it's scary when you identify with the killer.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You are like, you're starting to kind of more identify with the killer because he ends up being the guy that you root for, because the college students or the teenagers or whatever are just unlikable, awful people, and you want to see them get murdered.
Well, that's kind of the thing with like Rob Zombie movies. And even though I loved Devil's Rejects, they're like this and this, but that was kind of a different twist by making the villains the heroes. Rob Zombie doesn't seem to understand the difference between what a flawed character is, i.e. the kind we can get behind, and a fucking asshole. Mm. All he writes are fucking assholes. Yeah. And he seems to think that that makes them flawed characters. And it does, but it also makes them fucking assholes. And I don't want to spend 90 minutes with them. Rob Zombie is one of the worst modern horror filmmakers when it comes to characters.
Absolutely. Ooh. Well, I do love Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses, but pretty much everything else he's made, I detest. I hate his Halloween movies. What was it? Lords of Salem was just one of the worst.
Lords of Salem was horrendous.
Oh, God, that was bad. That was just awful. Like, he just seems to be good at mimicking Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Like, Devil's Rejects to me feels very much like almost like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 fan film or something.
It's
like
the Texas Chainsaw Massacre sequel we never got.
Exactly. That's what it feels like. And I like it for that. And I would like to see Rob Zombie. Like, I don't know why he made a Halloween remake. He really should have done a Texas Chainsaw Massacre film.
I want to ask you a question, Peter. Who did you identify with more in Devil's Rejects? William Forsythe as the insane cop, or with the Firefly family. Because even though they are the continuing characters, I still wanted to see William Forsythe kill these bastards.
Oh,
I still didn't want to see them get away with it.
I thought William Forsythe was awesome, and when I first saw the movie in theaters, I was really rooting for him to get vengeance for his brother's death, and I was really disappointed that they just ended up killing him off, and it just seemed very, very strange that the killers went out in this very almost heroic blaze of glory. What was that Leonard Skinner song? Yeah, it's like even though they're dying, like it still seems like they got this sort of hero's death, and that felt that was a bit off, I would say. As much as I like the film, yeah, I definitely identified a lot more with William Forsythe.
But to a lot of people, and I read this in so many reviews, the Firefly family were the good guys. Because they were the ones running from the law, it made the cop the bad guy. And I think that's a generational thing. The younger audiences saw the Fireflies as almost this put-upon underclass.
I never got that impression because, I mean, in the opening credits of the film, you see all these victims in cages, you know, in the basement of their house. Like, I never got this impression that these were characters to root for. Like, they're fun to watch in the same way that a movie like American Psycho is fun to watch, where you know that this guy is a piece of shit. You know he's an evil guy, but you're following along this just horrifying car crash of events because you just can't look away. But they're not characters to look up to or see as like a put upon, you know, lower class. They're psychopaths. They're basically just the family from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. They're crazy, murdering, cannibalistic, skin wearing psychos, and they should be put to death by William Forsythe.
What about other non-slasher horror genres? Do you think that editing plays a part in this? Because I think editing is very telling, along with music, when it comes to tone and atmosphere. For instance, I was watching Naked Lunch the other day, which might not be a technical horror film, but it's got talking typewriters and, you know, anuses that speak to you and whatnot. Naked Lunch, I was specifically noticing how long the cuts were. That a scene would just go on with a single camera shot for sometimes a minute, minute and a half without a cutaway to something. You get a film like, it's not a horror film, but like To Live and Die in L.A. There are almost no insert shots. He uses a master or a two shot for almost the whole movie without reverses. Nowadays, a movie, especially a horror movie, is quick cut, quick cut, quick. It's like you can't go more than a second or two without cutting to another angle. And I think you cannot achieve atmosphere. You cannot achieve the terror with that kind of editing.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that being an editor myself, they're a little too shotgunny, where it's just like I watch stuff and I'll see things that can be trimmed, but there's so many cutaway shots, or they're trying to just keep everything moving. The big thing that gets me right now that's very popular, and this isn't something that's really done in editing, but this is something I've noticed, where they'll do there's something going on, and they'll zoom in, and then zoom in again, and it's just, or zoom in, zoom out, and like Sabotage was a movie that did that a lot, and it really annoyed me because I'm like,
Battlestar
All right.
Galactica did that a lot too. The TV show.
Did Battlestar
show.
Galactica? Yeah, I never really watched the show, so I don't. But yeah, it was like I thought the movie was kind of cool, but I was like, could you stop? Like, if two people are talking, you don't need a moving camera and a cutaway and zoom in. It's like, stop trying to make it more exciting than it is. Like, because then you start to lose focus on it. And with horror movies, like you said, where it's really hard to build that tension and to get that unsettling feeling when they freaking edit every 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Like a movie like 13 Ghosts, the Dark Castle remake. I think I might have liked it if I'd been able to fucking see anything. Seriously, I think I got whiplash from all the editing in that. I don't think a second of that film goes by without a cut to something else. I think that film might just have the most number of edits in 90 minutes of all time. What's the point of building these gorgeous sets if you can't see them? What's the point of these amazing makeup effects if you can't see them? Why would Tony Shalhoub or any of the actors even give a performance when every single word is from a different camera angle?
The only thing that they focused on that they really showed, which was the money shot, was when that dude got split in half. Like that, they did a really, like they showed that whole thing. He gets cut and it runs down and you see the front and the back fall off. But yeah, but everything else in that movie, it's just like, all right, it's what the hell just happened?
Yeah, I should not, when I watch a movie, I should not go, what just happened? I mean, if the story makes you kind of go, wait a minute, I got to think this through, that's different, but not, what did I just see?
And it's not a horror movie. Gamer, the action movie with Gerard Butler.
Is that the one with Dexter Morgan as the villain?
Yes.
Okay, that was terrible. That was a terrible movie.
That is what the f*** just happened, the movie. Like,
yeah, the cinematography in that one is just, it's awful and just all over the place.
It's some of the worst editing I've ever seen and some of the worst directing I've ever seen. It's just a complete and utter train wreck. You can't focus on anything for more than 5 seconds, and the camera's flying all over the place trying to be energetic. They did all kinds of really weird fisheye lenses and stuff, and I just hated it. So, of course, the guy I work with who says that, horror movies are boring, he thought that was one of the best movies he ever saw.
You even have a difference when it comes to horror with like the Exorcist films. Now at some point we're actually going to do an Exorcist retrospective, but
nice.
like look at the first Exorcist, extremely slow, intentionally so, not slow in a boring way, slow in a paced way, slow and building to a conclusion. Then you've got the second film, which I love, but for different reasons. It's frantic. It's insane. It's nuts. And then you go back to William Peter Blatty now taking the reins for the third film. It's intentionally very slow and building again.
I love the third one. And the third one's my personal favorite.
Mine too. And it also has the best jump scare in movie history. The hallway scene in Exorcist 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it was all about building that scene. The scene is just a long pullback of a shot of a hallway in a hospital. And the camera does not move. It's all just this scene. You see the nurse going about her business. You see the security guard getting bored and going to get a cup of coffee. And you get false jump scares, but not in a cheap way, where you're, as the audience, you expect the jump scare, and there's no music staying, just nothing happens. Mm-hmm. And after about the fourth one of those, by the time it really happens, you jump to the goddamn ceiling because he played your ass.
Yeah,
big time.
That is how you do a jump scare. Not cameras there, cameras coming in, cameras coming in, cameras coming in, boo! That's not a jump scare.
Or my personal favorite, walks in the bathroom and goes over to the medicine cabinet and looks in the medicine cabinet. Closes the mirror. Oh, there's somebody standing behind him, and then they turn around and no one's there.
One's become like a that's like a parody of itself by this point.
I don't remember what movie I saw it in, but there was one that actually played that off quite well. He closed the mirror, and then you could see the thing behind it. There was no music sting, and he didn't notice it.
Mm.
And it was the audience saw that, but the character didn't. And I thought that actually worked quite well, I think of the fact that there was no ding there to make the audience jump.
Then it just creates that like that feeling in the pit of your stomach where you're like, oh, instead of like making you jump and then you kind of get it out of your system, then it's like, all right, well, now something bad is going to happen. So now you're kind of waiting for that. So it's a different dynamic.
Exactly. It is. And it's so much more. It makes you think like, have there been moments like in your own life where, you know, something horrible has been in the background that you didn't notice? Like,
sure we've all had that thing where you swear there's someone else in the room with you.
Yeah.
And there's not. And, you know, I don't believe in ghosts, but you just kind of, you can't shake that feeling.
Yeah.
I had somebody robbing me and I didn't know it.
That's true. Cecil got robbed by meth heads, in case you guys don't know.
Yeah, I got robbed by a freaking meth head who thankfully was stupid and got caught. But yeah, I didn't even realize that there was somebody else in the house at the time.
That actually brings up a different thing that's changed in horror. Real horror versus when you say horror, people think of either a knife kill movie or a vampire or a zombie or, you know, a monster from the depths of hell or something like that. What about just a psychopath breaks into your home and does stuff to you? To me, David Cronenberg is the creepiest element of Nightbreed. And it's a movie about monsters.
I honestly think that
the serial killer is the creepiest part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's the absolute highlight of that film. He's so good in that movie.
But I mean, that's because even though the movie is hardly set in the real world, like I said, it's got monsters and people that cut their own faces off and stuff. But Clive Barker absolutely achieved what he was intending with that character by making that character the home invader, the human, the scariest character.
Exactly. The real monster is the guy that could be your next door neighbor. Well, for me, the real type of horror movie plots tend to be the ones that scare me the most, because home invasion is something that really, really freaks me out. And to me, one of the scariest, creepiest movies of that sort of genre, like I love Henry is a really good example of that kind of just the
Jesus
scene.
Jesus Christ, the videotape scene in that.
Yes.
Still, it's one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen.
That really is, like the sun coming downstairs in the middle of it and everything. Like that really would be like the most terrifying thing ever.
No, I actually think the tag to that scene is even more terrifying, that Otis rewinds it because I want to watch it again.
That's so messed up. That to me, that's like it, be it ghosts or slashers or demons. Like to me, the whole real serial killer, like he's just he's a regular guy that just breaks into your house. To me, that's the scariest, because that is a true to life thing. It's something that's really happened. Movies like Henry, like Relentless, like American Psycho, like even Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah, they're
American
cannibals.
Psycho, since none of that actually happened, I would say no.
Debatable.
No, because in Rules of Attraction, they reference that Patrick Bateman is in a mental hospital because he thought he was a serial killer. American Psycho never happened.
Well, still, a person like that is very, it's terrifying to think that somebody who could be your next door neighbor, who could be somebody, you know, you go to work with, could end up being this horrible axe murderer. To me, there are ghost movies that have freaked me out. There are slashers and, you know, alien movies that have definitely creeped me out. Like Alien is a terrifying film, but, the whole home invasion thing, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the crazy hitchhikers and stuff like that, that freaks me out the most, because these are types of people that you could unfortunately run into in your life. And that's when it's done right, when it's done in the style of a movie like Henry, which to me is still one of the creepiest movies I've ever seen. It's it can be really terrifying.
The whole monsters, vampires thing, usually I enjoy them on an entertainment thing, but most of them aren't particularly scary. The only, I guess, monster that really freaks me out are ghosts, because I hate ghosts. That's my thing, you know. So
ghosts and bugs for Cecil.
Ghosts and bugs, yeah. God forbid we have a ghost bug, and I'm freaking locking myself in the closet. It's just that it's creepy. And the other thing that does bother me, and this is something that is more grounded in reality, is an example would be the movie where someone is having something done to them that is beyond their control. For example, Human Centipede. You got three kids that are kidnapped, they're drugged, and this doctor is doing an unthinkable medical thing to them, you know, by attaching them mouth to anus. And it's ridiculous, but it's so horrific. And the thing is, you know, is it unlikely? Yes, it's incredibly unlikely. But there is the possibility that this is something that someone could do to someone. Mm-hmm. And it just gives you that very uncomfortable feeling, because the hopelessness that the characters display, they're in this situation that's so horrific. And what a lot of people don't understand is, because so many people, oh my God, the movie's so disgusting, oh, it's horrific. Movie really is, like, you don't particularly see anything. It's not very bloody. You don't see any, you see very little of the surgery. It's more of the characters dealing with it. And then the girl's just crying. Her, like, expressions, and she's hitting the girl in the back, you know, just like, no, just that, that hopeless feeling where you're like, oh my God, you can't even conceive what they're going through. Yeah. Like that to me is just horrific. That's so uncomfortable and just so unpleasant. It's a tough sit.
I don't like the Human Centipede movies because I don't think they're very good. But at the same time, maybe in the hands of a better filmmaker, maybe like the Hostel movies would have been better. If Eli Roth wasn't...
Hostels are amazing.
No, Eli Roth is the worst thing that to happen to modern horror since Twilight. Yes, I just said that, and I mean it. Eli Roth is the worst thing to happen to horror movies because he is such an inept filmmaker. He has no grasp of subtlety or tact, and that can work in horror movies, but then he tries to pretend he's all deep and introspective. You see him talking about Hostel, and he's like making a statement about horror movies and about man's inhumanity to man, and it's like, no, you're not. You made a goddamn gore film, and you made it terribly. You suck as a filmmaker, Eli Roth.
Well, I don't like Eli Roth's movies. I wouldn't say he's inept as I think where he's not really inept as a filmmaker when it comes to his direction and the way his movies look good. His gore is top notch. It's just his writing is what makes me unable to really be a fan of his.
One Eli Roth film that is not about people going to party
and being
assholes.
You can't
do it, can you? Because
and being
he,
a complete
he has
asshole.
One type of movie he makes. People going out to party, bad things happen. Look at me, man. I'm like up there with Friedkin, man, as a director, man. No, you're not. You're a goddamn inept child. Shut up and sit down and quit embarrassing yourself.
I know I've kind of gone off about the assholes in horror movies, but for Cabin Fever, I didn't think that everybody was an asshole. I thought that there were a multitude of different characters. Like the one...
Please don't tell me you think they were multi... Faced.
There was a couple.
There was
like,
pancakes.
Pancakes.
I'm sorry. I really, truly hate Eli Roth. I really do, Cecil.
Huh?
I really
and a
hate
professor.
Him.
A professor of being a dog.
Cabin Fever is a good movie. And then Hostel, the thing was the characters. None of them. None of them were unlikable. I actually liked all of them. And the thing is, that movie, nothing bad happens for probably the first hour of the film. It's it really builds up, and then
count as character development if they're all douchebags.
They're not douchebags. I thought that
yes,
they were. They weren't douche. I didn't think they were. Believe me, I will forget all the characters in the Friday the 13th remake were douchebags. All the characters in Nightmare on Elm Street remake were douchebags.
Yep.
All the people in the Hostel movie, actually in Hostel 1 and 2, all the main characters, I did not think were douchebags. I thought that they were all fairly likable, interesting characters. So that when really horrific things started happening to them, you didn't want that to happen to them. I don't want to see, this kid get his toes chopped off. And like, you weren't, that was in both of those movies. I was not rooting for the millionaires that were paying to kill these kids that were traveling across the country. I didn't want to see that. I wanted to see them be able to get away and survive this. That was why I really enjoyed those movies. I thought that they got such a shit reputation after they made a butt ton of money. It was weird because when they came out, I would say more so the first one. When the first one came out, people were talking about how it was, really good. It was reinvigorating the horror genre. And then all of a sudden, between the time of Hostel 1 and Hostel 2, there was this backlash against torture porn movies, which I fucking hate the term. And because a lot of the movies that fall under torture porn aren't even that particularly that gory.
I don't necessarily like that term either. I have used it in the past because there are some films that I think like Hostel. The entire second half of that film is all about, let's see how long we can linger on horrific gore. And to me, they didn't build up any characters, so it was all about, look at our gore effects, look at our gore effects. That, to me, is torture porn.
I didn't think so, because I thought that they spent enough time with the characters, and they're kind of traveling through the country and they're having a good time and they're all getting along, and then they get thrust into this situation. And I like the duality of it, because it starts off really lighthearted. Like, if you were to watch the first, you know, the first half of the film, it almost plays out like a comedy of buddies traveling across Europe. And then all of a sudden they get put in this situation, and it gets worse and worse and worse and more bleak, until finally the end, and it just ends abruptly. And I thought it was fantastic. I really, really genuinely enjoyed all, you know, Cabin Fever, Hostel 1 and Hostel 2, various different reasons. But I like the way that he makes films, and I think that there are genuinely terrible directors out there.
I got to ask you this, Cecil. What kind of turtle wax are you using to polish that turd?
Look,
like I said, I don't think he's a bad filmmaker when it comes to the way his movies look. It's just his writing that I don't like. I think it's subjective. Either you like his characters or you don't. I personally don't. I feel like the first half of Hostel feels very much like an American Pie or a Euro Trip type movie. And I don't like those characters. I don't like those characters that basically just live on when the next time is that they're going to get f***ed up or when they're going to get laid or whatever. Like, I find it very boring. And then the second half of the movie is just, you know, people getting tortured and lingering on a broken toe for as long as you can. And when you're someone like me that doesn't really like those characters, you don't really care so much for the, like, it's obviously shocking what you're seeing. It's very gruesome, and it would be a horrifying situation to be in. But an example of one of those types of horror films where it's a character kind of stuck and not able to do anything about their situation, I'd say, for me at least, a movie like Misery would be a better example of that.
While I don't like Misery, I see what you're saying, because Misery needed to be more well written, for one thing. I thought the script was one of the bigger problems, but that actually did build up how bad his situation is and how desperate things are getting. I think you're seeing something in Hostel that Peter and I just are not.
You can disagree with me all you want. I mean, the thing. It's your opinion.
Yeah, it's just subjective. I mean, I have nothing against you liking Eli Roth's movies. Like, you stated your opinion on why you like them. I stated my opinion on why I don't. And then I came up with one that I felt is even if the script for Misery isn't all that great, and the book might be a little more shocking. Like, I just think James Caan really brings it in that movie. He really makes you sympathize with that character.
You can't bitch about the performances in that film.
Yeah, the acting in that movie is amazing on both parts. You know, both the character of Annie Wilkes and the writer are just freaking awesome. Like, you really feel for that character, and you really want him to get away. And it's such a horrible claustrophobic feeling, because it's just these two people in this one house, and the guy can't get away. Like, that's, It's so grim, and I love the movie for that.
Misery would probably have not been as good a movie if it wasn't for those performances. Those performances were so good that it made it better than it probably should have been.
It's because the script needed to be a little bit better. How horror has changed. Now, horror has always been kind of poo-pooed by the mainstream. And I don't just mean mainstream movies, but the mainstream populace. Do you think that horror, whether it be a style of movie like a slasher movie or vampire movie or whatnot, do you think that it sort of has devolved when it becomes nothing more than a joke to pop culture? Like all of the Twilight jokes, or how all the cliches of the slasher movies are even joked about in sitcoms that have nothing to do with horror? Do you think that is a de-evolution of the horror genre when it becomes a joke? And I'm not talking about when something is like a Return of the Living Dead or something that's meant to be funny, but when horror becomes a joke?
I don't know. I think that it's not so much the de-evolution, because if something comes along and it's big enough, it's going to be lampooned. It's going to be joked about. I mean, when Blair Witch Project was huge, how many people were doing the camera up the nose thing, and how many parodies were done. Chris Rock was doing the thing where, you know, lost in the woods, where am I chicken, you know, and like that kind of shit for the MTV Awards. It was it's lampooning things that are popular. So they've achieved a certain level of popularity. So then now they're going to be goofed on. So I don't particularly see that as the de-evolution of anything. I see that as just something coming along that's so popular that it's kind of crossed over into the mainstream.
Yeah, I don't see that as a de-evolution, like Cecil was saying. It just means it's gotten big. When something gets to a certain point of popularity, it's going to be parodied. Rambo became one of the most popular aspects of the 80s, and then everything, the whole red headband, the droopy lip, the yelling and shooting the gun, like that was parodied by everything. Jason got popular, and then like every lampoon of a slasher would have a hockey mask and a chainsaw. It would just throw all the different tropes in together. That's not so much a black spot on horror in general, I would say. That's just it's just a testament to how popular it had gotten, and the more popular something gets, the more people will either make fun of it or rip it off or parody it. So no, it's not necessarily a negative aspect. It just means that it's done well enough to be acknowledged and to be made fun of.
Cecil, where can people find you just raving about how much you love Boo Scare movies?
You can find me talking about how great Eli Roth is over at...
Hey, you have the right to be wrong.
Huh? Oh, shush. At goodbadflix.com as well as geekjuicemedia.com.
Peter, where can people find you, the true horror of Canada, which isn't that high of a bar, but whatever.
You can find me absolutely hating Eli Roth at Zinematica on Twitter. You can find me on YouTube, The Cinemasochist, and Facebook, The Cinemasochist. Just extra hate for Eli Roth. Just so much hate.
And he deserves every ounce of it.
Now I'll tell you to shut up.
There it is. There it is.
There you go. It's not a radio drone without that, is it? And you can find me at 1201beyond.com. You can contact the show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. Have a good night, guys.
Radiodrome is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.